Let me begin with a few definitions. That is, definitions of literature, since it is on the question of the real nature of literature that the whole discussion hinges. These definitions will enable us to see to what extent we are justified in approaching Buddhist canonical literature as literature. According to Carlyle, literature is the thought of thinking souls, souls with a capital S. There is no doubt that the great being who was so deeply moved by the sight of an old man, a sick man, a corpse, and a wandering ascetic, that he left home in quest of supreme enlightenment, was a thinking soul in the fullest sense of the term. And no doubt that the Buddhist canonical literature, the Buddhavacana, contains what we may well describe as the Buddha's thought, especially if, with D.H. Lawrence, we understand by thought not just the manipulation of abstract ideas, but a man in his wholeness, wholly attending. The next definition does not bear quite so directly on the present discussion, but it is of considerable general interest. Literature, taken in all its bearings, says William Godwin, the author of Political Justice, forms the grand line of demarcation between the human and the animal kingdoms. One is reminded here of the fact that in Tibetan representations of the Wheel of Life, the blue Buddha is depicted showing the inhabitants of the animal world a book. The book stands for literature. It is the possession of literature rather than the possession of language that distinguishes man from the animals. For even though it may be argued that animals can in fact speak, as distinct from making inarticulate noises, it can hardly be argued that they can write books. Moreover, if it is literature that forms the line of demarcation between man and animals, that line will be formed most definitively by that literature which, in the terms of the previous definition, is the thought of the most deeply thinking soul. This would appear to suggest that inasmuch as the Buddha is traditionally regarded as the deepest thinking soul known to history, Buddhist canonical literature is not only literature, but literature par excellence. Though in certain respects very illuminating, both these definitions, Carlyle's and Godwin's, are at the same time rather narrow. A much more comprehensive definition is provided by the classical scholar J.W. McHale, who writes, "Language put to its best purpose, used at its utmost power, and with the greatest skill, and recorded that it may not pass away, evaporate, and be forgotten, is what we call, for want of a better word, literature." This definition must be examined clause by clause. To begin with, literature is language put to its best purpose. But what is the best purpose to which language can be put? From a Buddhist point of view, the answer to this question is to be found in the exhortation with which the Buddha sent his first 60 disciples out into the world. Go ye now, monks, he is reported as saying, and wander, for the gain of the many, for the happiness of the many, out of compassion for the world, for the good, for the gain, and for the welfare of gods and men. Preach the Dharma. Proclaim a consummate, perfect, and pure life of holiness. There are beings whose mental eyes are covered by scarcely any dust. But if the Dharma is not preached to them, they cannot attain salvation. In other words, the monks are to preach, are to make use of language in order that beings endowed with awareness may be enabled to live the holy life, brahmacharya, and attain salvation. And they are to do this out of compassion. Thus, the best purpose to which language can be put is to communicate the salvific truth, Dharma. Buddhist canonical literature contains this salvific truth. Hence, Buddhist canonical literature is literature in the most real sense of the term. Next, literature is language used at its utmost power and with the greatest skill. There is no doubt that in communicating the salvific truth, the Buddha stretched the language that was available to him to the utmost limit of its capacity. There are indeed those who maintain that middle Indic was in fact insufficient for his purposes, much as the English language sunk under Milton. Thus, Buddhist canonical literature is literature in this sense too. Finally, literature is language recorded that it may not pass away, evaporate, and be forgotten. That Buddhist canonical literature is literature in this sense is obvious. After being preserved entirely by oral means for upwards of half a millennium, the salvific truth communicated by the Buddha was committed to writing for the benefit of future generations. In the case of the Pali Tipitaka, the Theravada version of the Buddhavacana, this took place in Ceylon towards the end of the 1st century BCE. The text of the three Pitakas and the Atthakatha thereon did the most wise bhikkhus hand down in former times orally, says the Mahavamsa, or Great Chronicle of Ceylon. But since they saw that the people were falling away from religion, the bhikkhus came together, and in order that the true doctrine, Saddhamma, might endure, they wrote them down in books. Whether by oral or literary means, the preservation of the Buddhavacana has indeed been ever regarded as the special responsibility of the monastic order. This more comprehensive definition not only gives us a better understanding of the real nature of literature, not only helps us to see to what extent we are justified in approaching Buddhist canonical literature as literature, it also suggests that Buddhist canonical literature is in fact literature writ large, in the sense that by approaching Buddhist canonical literature as literature, we in fact endow the concept of literature with a fuller and richer content than it possessed before. It is therefore interesting to note that McHale concludes by saying of language, put to the best purpose, and so on, that it is what we call, for want of a better word, literature. For want of a better word. It is almost as though he felt that the phenomenon he had so carefully defined so far transcended what was ordinarily understood by the term literature that a more appropriate word was really needed. Might one suggest that the more appropriate word would be one that was reminiscent of the term Buddha Vachana? Or, if that was considered as representing too high an ideal for the phenomenon in question, one that was reminiscent of what the poet monk Vangisa, in verses addressed to the Buddha, spoke of as deathless speech, amata vacha, that deathless speech which is, at the same time, truth, satya.